Please join me in welcoming Assistant Secretary for Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy, Andy Karsner.
You are there. I was wondering if you were there.
Good to see you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. That is very generous, and I don't think there's anything I can achieve without you and the people in this room. So let me kick off by saying thank you to you, Bob Dineen, and to your leadership team, both in the RFA and the executive committee that I had the opportunity to meet with this morning. I told you this morning I treat you all like my own board, and that's true, because what you do, what you're seeking to do over these next few days will define the very purpose of why I serve and why so many serve in this administration. I also want to thank Stephen Johnson, the administrator of EPA. If he's here with us, I think that's real demonstrable that every time you all meet, you seem to attract members of the president's cabinet. And I think that's a real sign of the significance of who you are and how you are valued in terms of this nation's energy supply and its energy security. So it gives me great pleasure to be here, extend warm wishes on behalf of both Secretary Bodman and the President. And I appreciated your remarks earlier today, Bob, that this is probably the most pro-ethanol, pro-biofuels president that this nation has ever seen. I think that it's one of those things a little bit like Harry Truman. That's one of my dad's favorite presidents. You know, when Harry was around, people were just mild about Harry. He had so many things on his plate. And then sooner or later, people understood the instrumental and historic things that were being advocated by President Truman were transforming the nation for the next 5 and 6 decades out. And I think if you listen carefully to the words, beyond what the newscasters are broadcasting after the State of the Union, but if you dig into what the President has said in the last 2 states of the Union, you will find calls to action and calls to policy that are unprecedented in size and in scope and in the demand for an accelerated time frame. And that's really what I want to talk to you all here today about. People sometimes grow uncomfortable with phrases like addiction to oil. I am not uncomfortable. The Department of Energy is not uncomfortable. And like any addiction, it can be counterproductive. It can be unhealthy. It can be a challenge to our vitality and well-being. And however you perceive the depth of our addiction, we clearly have an obligation to expediently address it and get beyond it. And your industry is the tip of the spear about how we do that. It's not just about our energy security. As we build out grain-based ethanol and biofuels, we will arrive at a point where we need to go beyond that into a next generation, and that is the cellulosic ethanol that so many of you all are investing in today. The cellulosic ethanol, the President believes and the science bears out, can be the most effective means of stabilizing greenhouse gases, stopping them, and eventually diminishing them, because the transportation sector is the fastest growing contributor to greenhouse gases worldwide. And of course, it is a question of our global economic competitiveness. This country is engaged in the greatest challenge to its economic well-being, competing for scarce resources worldwide, that it has ever been faced with in our national history. And the success of your meetings, not government policy exclusively, but what we do effectively to catalyze your investment, your innovation, your growth of this sector of the economy, will affect how my children and yours have their capacity to inherit the American dream and the birthright of opportunity that we have come to take for granted. So the stakes are very high, economically, environmentally, and for our national security. And it's imperative that you understand, and as I think so many of you do, and that's what brings you to this industry, that keeps you easily waking up in the morning, that we do more than seek what the to do things right as we develop a biofuels economy, but that we actually seek the right thing to do for our country. I'm also humbled because so many of you have been in this industry and have toiled at it a long time before it was fashionable for the wide swath of Washington politicians to embrace you. You were out there in the difficult days when it must have seemed like being in the wilderness, trying to get people to consider the future importance and relevance of what biofuels would mean to the country. And now, as these challenges press down upon us, your hour has arrived. And the country ought to be grateful for the early pioneers. We used to say, where I grew up in the West, that the road to the West was littered with the grave of early pioneers. But there were a few of them that made it, and those were the ones that captured the gold. And so this is your hour for that too. And enhancing profitability is going to be the key to sustainability in your industries. And so we want to make sure that we are devising policies that are predictable and stable and catalytic to capital markets that can grow profitability and grow this industry at the fastest rates that markets will bear. In Washington, people have been fond for a long time of sort of petting biofuels and renewable energy and saying, well, that's a good thing, but it's just around the corner. In fact, I think what we know from the size of this conference and the growth story we have seen in recent years, that we've already turned that corner. And if you were going with the metaphor, you'd actually say we're several miles down the road. And the question is, how do we pave that road out in front of us in a predictable and sustainable way? Biofuels are solving real problems for the country right now. They're creating very real and quantifiable job growth in the economy right now. And you're making the energy supplies of this country more secure. And whether you believe that that is best done through volumetric extenders and satisfying splash blends, or your pitch in the battle is rapidly getting to downstream retail for E85, all of these things are not mutually exclusive. All of these things have a place in the American portfolio as we seek greater penetration of biofuels. And I would add that's the same for biodiesel and our capacity to have more efficient engines. Because of your hard work, it's no mystery to any of you all that the United States surpassed Brazil this year to become the largest producer of biofuels in the world, 300% above the domestic installed capacity of biorefining, about where we were at the commencement of this administration. And I don't expect there to be any let-up in sight. And so as we are bursting at the seams and have new challenges in construction and in labor forces and in underlying commodity prices and in the volatility of grain prices, we have to stretch to work together, to interact in new ways in public-private partnerships that are catalytic to a future where we are really making it up as we go. And so the president said, all these plans that are on the table, 300%, passing Brazil, that's good, but it's not enough. What can we do more? How far can we cast our net into the future? What does the science say for us to sustain this industry? What kind of policies need to be devised? Last year, we contributed something to, on the order of displacing 500 million barrels of oil. Oil that we didn't have to import from regimes that are hostile to our interests or might leverage energy economics over our future. Last year, petroleum deliveries to the United States were down. And they were down because of the people in this room. And so the president, inspired and spurred on by his morning national security report, said, let's go further. And we have sought to table, for Congress's consideration, the largest alternative fuel mandate that this country or any country has ever put forward in size and scope. 20% reduction in the consumption of gasoline within the decade. Now, in a bizarre year, foreign policy, somehow that got muted by the media. But sooner or later, they will understand the significance of what it is that you all do, and it is our hope, it is our commitment that as they begin to understand it and study it, they don't succumb to the false logic and mythologies that have plagued your industry by virtue of those who have an oar in the water, a stake in somehow spreading things that just categorically aren't helpful and often aren't truthful. We're going to be more aggressive in our communication and in our outreach and in our education of the American citizenry so they know precisely what the real value of that contribution is. Let's talk about 20 and 10 for a moment. 75% of that to be satisfied by displacing gasoline. That's 500% more than the great success that we celebrated only a few years ago with 7.5 billion gallons in the Energy Policy Act that spurred this first round of growth. Of course, a quarter of this, at least a quarter, can come from increased vehicular efficiency. And as many of you know, in our office, we also have responsibility for the Vehicle Technologies Program. So we will have to attest to the availability of technology for efficiency, technology like lightweighting and plug-in hybrids based on lithium-ion and supercapacitors, engine compression optimization, and engines that are capable and flexible to use higher ratios of biofuels. Not just E85 with a greater maximizing the energy content, but also exploring the potential for higher blends like E15 and E20. And we intend to work together with you all and the automobile industry to realize what happens when we get beyond E10, because in truth, we're not that far away. And there's no point acting like it's not that we're not right on the cusp of achieving it. These goals are not only possible, and people will tell you they're not, and we need your help to explain to them, based on the work and activity and innovation and investments you make, that it is not only possible, it's absolutely quantifiable. It's within our reach. You know, Henry Ford used to say, whether you think you can or you think you can't, either way, you'll end up proving yourself correct. And that's almost exactly where the biofuels industry is in America today, on the cusp of realizing these great goals for the nation, or having the skeptics rule and determine that this country isn't capable of those things. Don't you let others for a minute take away the American birthright of the ability for us to invest in ourselves, to dream large dreams, and then to go about diligently achieving it. And with your leadership, government will walk with you and every step of the way ensure your success. A quarter of the vehicle efficiency, a quarter of the goal coming from vehicular efficiency. Not in two decades have we begun to move the needle on CAFE. And so the president has tried to take us out of the trenches because he no longer has to campaign for votes. We have the luxury of exclusively campaigning for this nation's energy security, environmental well-being, and economic future. And so the tired old trenches of increasing supply, in this case alternative domestic supply, or increasing efficiency and competing with one and the other and leaving ourselves in a chicken and egg type scenario, those days are gone. We are going to move to increase efficiency aggressively and increase domestic alternatives to gasoline and petroleum consumption aggressively. In two decades, we've been talking about a quarter of a mile a gallon, a half a mile of a gallon. Think about the technology two decades ago when IBM Selectrics outnumbered the PCs. And the only PC available widely was the Commodore 64. Think about where we are today, folks, and the availability of technology to integrate into our economy. And nowhere is the technology growing more than with you all in the biofuels industry. And so it's not the old ethanol and the new ethanol, the old economy and the new economy. It is a continuum of technological growth from all of you who are invested in the heartland with new sources of conversion technologies to maximize our domestic biofuels potential. You know, the transport sector is the largest sector, as I mentioned, for contributing to greenhouse gas emissions. And oddly enough, even though I lead a few international initiatives, the Transatlantic Dialogue on Biofuels and the Asia-Pacific Partnership on Clean Development and Climate and Western Hemispheric Initiatives with Brazil, we so often diminish the role and focus almost exclusively on stationary power generation. But the Chinese last year became the second largest manufacturer of automobiles in the world. The difference between their number, 7.5 million cars, cars produced, and ours, 17 million, is that our growth rate is only marginal, 1, 2, 3% a year, if that. The Chinese grew at a rate of 24% last year. These are not problems we can afford to ignore in the global competition we are in, because India is not far behind, and the United States will be leading on issues that confront the serious challenge of climate change, but we will be doing it with typically American means of doing it, not strictly top-down regulatory control measures, but bottom-up inducements that are catalytic to markets to invest and trade and develop and innovate new technologies that are the game changers. And so it is the case that this country has invested more in climate change science, technologies, and programs, $29 billion over the last 5 years, than any other nation on Earth, and that we're actually making real reductions in our greenhouse gas emissions intensity. But your industry will be at the forefront of this international dilemma. And so we have to think larger in scale. The president understands the environmental impacts, and he also understands what it means to invest in the Midwest rather than in potentially hostile regimes in the Mideast. But as I said, above all, you can be sure that this president, who views himself unshakably in the midst of what we should all consider to be true, a wartime administration, made clear after the State of the Union. I was with him the following day in DuPont, and he said, "For too long, our nation has been dependent on foreign oil, and the dependence leaves us vulnerable to hostile regimes and to terrorists. It's in our vital interest to diversify America's energy supply, and the way forward is through technology." Let me talk about two more things in the 20 and 10 program besides the size and the scope and the technologies. You need to understand the time frame. These words, voiced by our president, contemporaneous to the difficulties of our time, are not unlike the words that have been voiced from the Oval Office for the last quarter century. And yet we're twice as dependent. The difference now is that these are not words that are aspirational, 25 by 25, 30 by 30 policy studies coming out of our labs, however valid they may be. This is a time frame that is commensurate, by no coincidence, with the net present value calculations that you need to make for investments. 10 years, something that can be accounted for, something we can put our arms around, something that doesn't define a generational difference a third of a century out, but something that we can measure within the decade. And these 10 years are significant in another way. The president wants it enforceable in law as a top-line performance metric for the market to aspire to and to achieve and to guide all the other actions of researchers, scientists, farmers, policymakers, and the like. And your voice will be vital in this national conversation, and you are so well represented by the Renewable Fuels Association in advancing those key issues. You all know what happened in the Energy Policy Act when we got tax credits for downstream retail, when we extended the 51% 51 cent per gallon biofuels tax credit. We know what we intended to do when we raised the bar on R&D available. And we know how important it was in Title 17 when we established a mechanism for loan guarantees to extend the government's balance sheet. This year, Congress allocated $4 billion. Next year, the president is requesting $9 billion. Principally dedicated to expansion of a biofuels and alternative energy economy. All those things were put into law. And we have to ask ourselves in the course of the next few days, are these tools enough? Are we utilizing them enough? Are they sustainable? Are they durable? Are they predictable? Are they giving capital markets the guidance necessary to keep your industry on the appropriate trajectory? Let's have an open discourse on these things, and let's make sure that policy moves in tandem with the evolution of your marketplace and with the evolution of the technologies that the taxpayer has been investing in to advance your marketplace. The 2007 Farm Bill has been tabled. I know tomorrow you'll hear from Colin Peterson, a great champion of domestic biofuels. And I know it includes $1.6 billion to fund renewables research and an additional $2.1 billion in loan guarantees to be administered through USDA. Again, we have to self-examine. Are the tools the right tools? Are we utilizing them enough? If we're not connecting enough to you, what is it we can do better? I like to think of all these things as the three-legged stool, as some of you have heard me talk about before, that there's not one catch-all technology that'll do it or one catch-all policy that'll do it. In fact, the three-legged stool is really between science and technology, that is, the research and development that is the core strength of the Department of Energy. The second leg is that consistent, durable policy component that allows for capital formation. And the third leg is capital formation and capital markets themselves. And these three legs of the stool have to be balanced for this tool to stand correctly. And we have got to have your input. And what we know is that we can learn over the past 36 months or so that that stool has been formed in a pretty strong way, that it ought to be fortified, that it ought to grow, in fact. And that in growing, we can not only have tripartite solutions to our tripartite problem of in environmental security, energy security, and economic competitiveness, but that we can have greater prosperity, leaving our hard-earned dollars here at home instead of exporting them abroad. I'd like to think of the problem this way, that technology and the opportunity that you all will be discussing over these many days are all on our side. But time is not. And that is why, as Bob says, at the command of the Secretary of Energy, as a top-line goal, mission for the Department of Energy, at the command of our Commander-in-Chief, urgency is the word of the day. Understanding the relevance to what we do here and its impacts and ramifications for years and, in fact, decades to come. Well, DOE is going to strive to do its part. You all know when the Advanced Energy Initiative was announced in last year's State of the Union to change the way we power our homes, offices, and vehicles, that you were at the center of that. And we devised a plan for 30% displacement of gasoline by 2030, and we did that in the context of commercializing cellulosic ethanol by the year 2012. And what a difference a year makes. What a difference a year makes. Will it be 2012? Or 2011, or 2010. There are people in this room that will say 2012, cellulosic ethanol, 30 by 30. This isn't just a vision. This is a business plan, something real and tangible that we can invest in using current technology to bring those price points down. At one point, we had said we need price parity with $1.07. But, of course, we know that conventional ethanol is inching up in price owing to the underlying commodities. And as we are in the laboratory driving efficiencies and the cost of enzymes downward, we expect those two lines to meet. And they're meeting closer to the current needs, closer moving forward in time than we had anticipated just a year ago. We elevated the issue. Administrator Johnson joined Secretary Bodman and Secretary Johans at the Renewable Fuels Conference, Advancing Renewable Energy in rural America in St. Louis. And the president, for many of you who were there, came and was far more eloquent and passionate than I could ever be. And he challenged us to say this should be the centerpiece of our national energy policy. Next year, we'll be hosting the World International Renewable Energy Conference in Washington, D.C., the third round after the first in Bonn, the second in Beijing. We'll be doing that together with the Secretary of State to show off your industry and your leadership. And before that, we hope we can have another round of advancing renewable fuels. And wouldn't it be nice if we had it in Des Moines? Wouldn't it be nice if it was just before someone wanting to be president had to actually figure out and understand holistically what it is you do? And we hope you will be at both of these events, and that your voices will be loud and represented. We want to focus not just on coordinating across nations, but coordinating across agencies in a new way as a reflection of your maturity, of the maturity of this industry. And that's why Undersecretary Tom Doerr, my counterpart at the Department of Agriculture, and I co-chair at the level of presidential appointees and above an interagency biofuels coordinating committee. And we intend to meet monthly to take on all the issues that no one agency is capable of doing alone in its stovepipes. The issues of feedstock that have been the domain over at the Department of Agriculture, so that we can put to rest some of the food versus fuel debate, or at least begin to tangibly manage and stabilize in a sustainable way how we get feedstocks, not just in the conventional corn-based ethanol economy, but in the future cellulosic ethanol economy, to market expediently and store them correctly and manage them correctly. And, of course, what we're conducting in our national labs are platforms research, both thermochemical and biochemical platforms for new ways to break down and to make ethanol. And even as we do this in the Applied Science Laboratory of the Department of Energy, we have a massive undertaking, $375 million of solicitation for three new bioenergy centers across the nation to form a consortia between the private sector and national labs and universities and attract the best talent to go beyond even what we're doing to stand up the new iron and steel of cellulosic biorefineries, but in parallel seek to perfect the plants and organisms through biomimicry for energy crops for this nation to have a sustainable future. Seek to perfect the enzymes and the genetic code that can break down those energy crops more efficiently and more cost effectively. And so the future is very bright. And of course, what you're faced right now are things that also require this interagency effort with the Department of Transportation to look at new ways to enable pipeline transport, to deal with FERC, to talk about the relevance of clean energy corridors that can do more to move coal by wire and alleviate some of that bottleneck in the transportation sector for rail car movement of ethanol and the capacities that we will need to reach the president's goal. And ultimately, there is the downstream question of retail availability. And here we have to focus on what a transition might look like as we race ahead to fulfilling E10 as a splash blend and an important volumetric extender. Once we cross E10, we have a dilemma, and we have to get around the table early and often. And our Freedom Car and Fuel Partnership, run through our Vehicle Technologies program and with our Biomass program, is the perfect place and the perfect role for government to convene to begin analyzing new ways that engines can be warranted for higher blends, to understand new ways that E85 can get better maximized content. Our Clean Cities program, so many of you are familiar with. Minnesota, the folks from Minnesota, I know you're very familiar with it because you have almost a third of the E85 pumps in the nation collaborating with our Clean Cities program. And we need to expand and replicate that effort, and we need to get beyond independent downstream retailers. And so we're hoping to have a broader conversation with your allies and supporters within the majors in the petroleum industry to figure out how E85 goes further in that transition, even as we seek to get more penetration in flexible fuel vehicles and more life out of an engine to burn higher blends of E15. We're also looking at new mechanisms. Section 942 of the Energy Policy Act is something we're going to take on this year to begin calculating the way that the government can get involved in reverse auctions. I wish I had all the answers about the end state of where we're going. I think it's quite significant that we move this way, and we're going to work collaboratively through our Federal Energy Management Program to ensure that the government is an early adopter. The president, the day after the State of the Union, didn't get much press for what was, again, an historic and unprecedented executive order to raise the efficiency levels of the federal government, to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions, to ensure that the federal fleet is not less than 75% capable of alternative fuels, and that it is actually using the alternative fuels where that fleet is. And so we're going to need your collaboration to do it, and we're intimately working with the largest users of energy in the world, the Pentagon, the Air Force in particular, to figure out ways to get biofuels across their fleets, across their bases, to enhance their mission. And by the way, it boosts the morale of our soldiers when they know that what they're tanking up with is not something from the same faraway land where they're battling for our freedoms today. But Bob, I told you I had a bunch of announcements and propaganda, I guess this is the point in the speech where I actually like to speak a little bit more from the heart. You know, DOE's best role is not explaining to you all of the good things that government can do on a top-down basis. You all are well beyond the handout phase. You are into the phase where government needs to be supportive in offering you a predictable environment for your innovation and investments, and to actually fulfill those roles of government that are indispensable and cannot be filled by you all in the marketplace to ensure your success and your longevity in planning. And so we intend to convene all the stakeholders in this biofuels economy. We intend to be your partners as we gather folks around the table to assess and measure the goods. Our national laboratories, but our headquarters and our leadership as well. In the long term, there is a great deal to aspire for here. In the short term, we need your help on Capitol Hill, ensuring that the bipartisan support that underlies your community is sustained in a way that manifests itself in legislation that this president can sign to ensure that 20%, up to 35 billion gallons alternative equivalent of ethanol is put into law and enforced by law. Some of you were on the flight with me yesterday, I should say the three flights that came out of Dallas-Fort Worth when we got on the plane and off the plane and on the plane and off. You know who you are. And it was a great flight because all the talk on the flight was biofuels, so nobody managed to mind that we had 6 hours delay in doing that. If you had 6 hours of delay, you might have wandered around DFW Airport, and some other airports have this, BWI, and there's a brochure there about a welcome home program. And my dad introduced me to the Welcome Home Program because my dad, I'm one of these military kids, and it's difficult for me to be out here looking at this beautiful sunrise in the desert and not think of other folks my age and younger that are in deserts far away. That's just the environment I grew up in. And so when I think about that Welcome Home Program, we saw so many of those soldiers on the flight with us yesterday exhausted, and we saw them in the lounges around DFW Airport, and you saw some of the retirees and veterans and school kids that were coming out to the airport to greet those folks. I can't help but reflect on my own dad's homecoming years and years ago. Now, in those days, when you would get stationed and deployed abroad, the best you could hope for wasn't email or Skype. The best you could hope for was for that cassette tape to arrive in a tightly taped up plastic package so it wouldn't get wet in the shipment about every 6 weeks with your loved one's voice to tell you everything was okay 6 weeks earlier when they recorded it. Well, when Dad came home from that faraway place where nobody spoke English and we got into the big American car to go have a Saturday drive in the days when you'd get a Dallas Cowboy mug or something and somebody would clean your windshield, you remember those days. We would go sit in a long, long, long line. And I guess that's when I first became aware of your issue, of your leadership. When that dad who'd been away for more than a year serving our country would sit in the driver's seat for an hour in a long, long line, turning off the engine, turning on the engine, and slowly creeping up to the pump and looking over at me and looking out the windshield and muttering to himself, America can do better. America must do better. Of course, we could only get in that line if it was the right day of the week and the green flag was up and not the red one and our license plate was odd and not even. And the veteran couldn't bring himself to have the discussion he wanted to have with his son because all he could think of is, can't we do better? Ladies and gentlemen, everything you do here in the next couple days is about fulfilling that promise to the next generation, doing better by this nation, understanding the vision of where we have to lead this nation for better environmental stewardship, for better economic competitiveness, for the energy security, for the national security that we demand by our birthright to inherit the American dream. 2 years, 23 months, in fact. That's what remains in this administration. And some people will say, oh, they're done. We're already talking about the next election. We are far from done. We have fourth quarter legs. We are fresh and ready to work with you, to work with everybody across both aisles in Congress on a bipartisan basis to deliver monumental legislation that will fortify your industry for another generation to deliver those results. 2 years, anyone who's had a two-year-old in their home like I do will tell you 2 years is a very long time. 2 years to watch transformation occur. 2 years to fortify the changes and the growth rate and the trajectory to make sure you are growing more prosperous and profitable, and in doing so, bringing our nation and our planet into a healthier and more secure state of being. From the bottom of my heart, thank you very much for who you are and what you do. Thank you.